It is January the 31st, 2011. I'm at San Diego State University Library and Information Access in the University Club Room. We are about to interview, or I'm about to interview Dr. Carol Wayman, and this is part two of an interview. He is talking about his life today. The focus will be on the Citizens Interracial Committee, or the CIC, and San Diego and the civil rights activities during that period. Good morning, Dr. Wayman.
Good morning, Gloria.
Today, I'm going to just allow you to talk about the CIC, its role in the civil rights era here in San Diego, so you can begin.
Well, I appreciate that. Maybe about tomorrow night, this time, we will finish this little job of civil rights in San Diego.
All right. We're not in a hurry.
Right. I think I've covered, I'm not sure, so I have to ask, did I cover my coming to San Diego at all at the beginning?
Yes, you did.
Okay. I'm going to start then with having come to San Diego with that little room. Yeah, we talked about that little room there.
Exactly.
And
your
setting
office.
It up. Mm-hmm. And with my colleague that I chose immediately, Al Caldillo, who was with me the whole time. That's where I will start.
Al who?
Caldillo, C-A-U-L-D, L-L-O, Caldillo, yeah.
Okay.
Al, yeah, Al Caldillo, Spanish name, mm-hmm. Spanish spelling. And he was my assistant right from the beginning. And he was with me all the way through.
He was your assistant for the Citizens Interracial Committee?
Right.
Okay.
He was the assistant director all the way through for the whole 5 years. He was a great guy. I haven't talked to him lately. I've been trying to find out where he is. We in the Hispanic community, we're trying to find out now where he is. Well, we opened the doors, as I said before, the day after Labor Day, 1964. That's where I'm going to pick up.
Okay.
The city then finally had begun to believe there was a problem. But again, the mayor did not want to use the term human relations because the council felt that was admitting we had a problem. So okay. He didn't do that. Enter Carol Wayman then on that date in September because finally they had decided maybe there's a problem that we need to address. So now I'm here. So I'm picking up now. Now I'm here. And I mentioned about at every hour of the day, at some point, Al and I did our visual survey looking down on the streets from our office at 520 East Street
yes.
to see how many black people we saw and how many
right.
Hispanics. And we didn't see very many.
Mm-hmm.
And that told us then that much of the oral complaints that we were hearing were valid. Not just from blacks, but from Hispanics especially, too, that we were not visible.
Okay.
All right, we'll enter there. Now, it was our job then to begin to write programs, which I won't go into, but we cover all the programs we had to begin to write programs that addresses the problems we saw.
Mm-hmm.
The problems were in terms of areas, housing, employment, police relations, human relations, education, youth, and whatever, media, and every other aspect that involved the community.
Okay.
We were invisible. We began then, after our survey,
mm-hmm.
we began to say, you know, we now can also witness that we are invisible. We meaning people of color, not just blacks.
Okay.
That you seldom saw black people, Hispanic people, walking the streets just doing regular business hours. We said, this is strange. In all the cities we've been to, you see all kinds of people mingling during the day and so on, but not in San Diego. So we decided we, in fact, had a problem.
Okay.
The first problem was to say that we were invisible. And then we extended that because we found out that we were invisible in the media as well, big time. We also, though, had one thing going for us in the media that I'm going to cover later on, There was a name by there was a guy by the name of Jim Gordon, who was the anchor man for the news at Channel 8.
Okay.
So in the middle of this whole city, one of the racist, most racist we could find, there was a man that everybody respected as an anchor man in the media, though we were invisible in the media. But his name was Jim Gordon.
Was Jim Gordon an African American?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a great African American, and he was the anchor man at Channel 8. And Channel 8 was very popular. And one reason was because of Jim Gordon. He was as if he were not black. That is, he covered it well, recognizing blacks, talking about blacks when necessary. He was a good speaker, public speaker, made many public speakings, engagements. And he talked about the invisibility. In other words, he was black, or his African-American, all the way through. But he was non-black when he came for his professional. He was a good media man. He was a model for many people here.
Okay.
At that time. So here we have this city, and at night I turn on and I see one black man. We wonder how all this stuff came about with one black man here as a big anchor man. So we jumped in. The areas we covered that I'm going to cover today includes part of what we've already said, why the problem arose in the first place with CORE, that I've already covered, had the sewer poured out of the windows over their heads on the street that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
We had to again address that because CORE was asking us to address it.
Okay.
And I meant, CORE was charged, the members of CORE, and we can name all of them if necessary to give them credit, with disturbing the peace, but the particular business that brought the charges were never charged. That was not even a question. It was the blacks and the Hispanics and the white youth, known as CORE, who were guilty, and something should be done about those crazy radicals, and we're going to put their butts in jail. Now, that was the thing.
Now, so, who was saying that? Was it the police officers, or who was saying that about the CORE members?
City officials.
City, okay.
Police officials, and others in authority.
Okay.
What we call the White Boys Network.
Right.
All of the people who, in quotes, meant anything, city fathers,
all right,
who ran the city. Now, that does not mean there were not a few individuals out there, otherwise we couldn't have gotten anything done.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals who did not defend them. As I mentioned, there was a white attorney who went to the judge. I don't know the actual conversation, but we do know the results. That the judge says, we let the young men serve their time on the weekends in jail. And we have the men who that affected. We have the actual people there. And they're in town. I think it'd be good to interview some of them.
Okay. Would you like to give the names?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of names right now.
Okay.
Of the CORE. I'm going to give you the whole CORE, yeah. Names of all the CORE members.
Okay.
I'll just read them off to you in a minute. But the young men, not the women yet, the men who were involved in that phase of it was Ambrose Brodus. We'll give you his name and telephone number. I mean, all his credentials. These are great men.
Okay, I can take those later. You don't have to put them
on. Right, right. But the men, for example, were allowed to serve their time in jail on the weekends. And they'll give you the details of the hours and all of that. All because this attorney, white attorney, went to the judge, or to the, we said, to the court, and said, these are young men and they need to be with their families.
Okay.
Now, remember, this is 40-some years ago, so whatever family life they had was around early marriage and young kids and babies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. And so when I came into town, then that's the scene I saw. That's part of the scene I saw. And CORE asked us to help mediate the problem that was still going on.
Who were you mediating with? The CORE asked CIC to mediate with the city?
Yeah, with the city.
Okay.
And the others that were involved with the county, I guess, I guess it was the district attorney, probably the courts.
Okay.
But we'll look at the details later on.
Okay.
So we did.
Okay.
The official groups, I'm going to name a couple of them now.
Okay.
The San Diego, we'd call today's San Diego Gas and Electric Company, and Bank of America, and a few other utility companies at that time, which shall remain unnamed at this time.
Okay.
They were the ones bringing charges against CORE. And CORE asked CIC to mediate through the courts what was going on. And these guys, when I say these guys, the names that I just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember who the spokespersons were, but they are the ones who said, no, we will not meet with CIC, we will not meet with anybody, and we are bringing charges against them. So here it was in this city, after all this stuff had been thrown down and what have you, CORE is being charged, and they don't want to meet with anybody on behalf of CORE. And they said so, as the articles here. And if you do your research, you'll see the articles in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So there we were at a standoff, CORE on one hand, and city officials and public utilities and public companies on the other. And so here I was, I walked into this hornet's nest. Housing, employment, that was part of community relations there.
Okay.
In the housing, we were restricted through restrictive covenants from living in any of the county areas. There were 20 blacks, sometimes we say 22. My memories, my images jump in my head. 22.
Mm-hmm.
There were 22 blacks that lived outside of San Diego in the county areas when I came here. Only 22.
Black families?
Black families, right.
Okay.
Black families. I say that to say the housing was key to everything here.
Okay.
Now, let me just go through the housing thing. So one of the big areas was housing. Where are black people allowed to live? When I say allowed to live legally, though they were not allowed to live there according to many of the myths and all the historical stuff about properties going down and all of that. At that time, we had Proposition, what was it, Proposition 63, I guess it was. Anyway, yeah, during that year, 63, 64, we had the state Proposition 14. That's what, Proposition 14.
Okay.
Statewide initiative to say that the government should address the problem of fair housing, it was called, the Rumford Bill of Fair Housing. Rumford was a senator. A politician in Sacramento, and he's the one that sponsored this Rumford Fair Housing Bill throughout the state. It was contentious, and it faced the problem head on that there was no such thing as fair housing. In San Diego, it meant the restrictive covenants were going to be at the center of much of this, around the country, but especially here in San Diego, around the state, but especially in San Diego. And so we surveyed. Everything we're talking about today and hereafter was based on surveys that we did, or reports or of investigations, not just out of our head. So we made several investigations about housing,
okay.
Several visits. We set up, and it's still going on in some places, we set up teams of blacks and white going together after each one went separately to find out if they could rent a house or buy a house. The blacks would go and they would come back with their reports.
Mm-hmm.
Then the whites would go and they'd come back without their reports. Then we'd send a couple together, black and white, would go to the same places.
Oh, okay.
And so we have all those records, and that became the practice. So CIC had decided we'd work through committees so that it was not just little me and somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So we had housing committee, beautiful housing committee, made up of black and white and Hispanic and blue and green, whatever. And that is the housing committee would meet, make recommendations. That's what we have here, all these reports we've done.
Okay.
Housing committee would make reports about what we should do. We should have a survey here and a survey there. One of the results of, we'll say, the first year being here, to try to get it in perspective, the results was blacks could live only in about 13 census tracts, mostly in Logan Heights downtown. We did not live beyond, for those who don't know, Euclid Avenue. So for Euclid Avenue, we would say that was a mile from downtown, let's say.
Okay.
But that was restrictive. Blacks could not live beyond that. For those who know what this would mean that where I am now at Senegal State, blacks didn't live here at all. Oh. Nowhere around here.
Okay.
This was foreign to us.
And what year approximately was this?
This is 63 and 64. 64
okay.
when I came.
All right.
So the year that I'm now talking about is 1964, beginning with 64, and our initial approach to housing.
Okay.
Senegal State was way out there. That was a foreign place to us. Because we lived downtown is where black people lived.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, black people live literally downtown. One of the greatest shoe stands that ever existed was downtown. And the man was honored a few years ago when he died. He was not the typical, I would call it, black shoe. There's a name for black people who could only get shoe shine jobs in the South and so forth. He was well educated, well loved, liked, but it was downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where black people lived, and that's where we had our businesses, literally downtown. So the city downtown developed around us. And partly it's true because we could not live in white hotels and housing. We cannot stay in hotels here. Blacks could not. We could not eat in the major restaurants in San Diego. All around this housing thing. So we had black areas downtown that were popular,
okay.
called the Harlem of the West from the 1880s and all this. So here we are looking at housing, including employment. That was a zero. Employment in housing.
What do you mean employment was a zero?
That is, they didn't hire black people in any of the housing industries, period.
Okay.
It was controlled by the San Diego Real Estate Association. Later on, we want to talk about how we dealt with that. For we were in the middle of all of that, and it was generally from the 1950s and 40s, the urban laws and so forth, government housing, and the San Diego Real Estate Association was headed by a name by the His name was Tom Leach.
Okay.
Tom Leach. And we can get the spelling later on.
Okay.
And there was only one black member at that time that was a member of the San Diego Real Estate Association. And his name is, and he still lives. He's a great guy. Everybody likes him. His name is Mr. Logan. J.A. We just say J.A. Logan.
Okay.
Still has his office. Still works. It'd be good to interview him. He was one of the old Logan family here.
Okay.
Be good to identify him. Interview him. So here we are. We had to fight the association. He was our ally there. Invisible, but Logan, with T.A. Logan, was our friend. They are the ones who led the fight against opening the home market to black people. And so our committee did our little surveys, and we found out that there were restrictive covenants still being honored in places, Poway, Fallbrook, Escondido. Fallbrook, Escondido, Poway, they were the big ones. San Marcos, well, no, I don't know whether San Marcos per se had anything on their paper, on their records. But we do know that the Poway, which was just a little area, not a big city like
right.
it is now.
So it's more like a township in those days.
That's what
so.
It was, a township.
Okay.
My job was to take my staff and train others to address legally the problem of covenants, restrictive covenants. And we did that. We had our committee literally do research. My job was to lecture and talk about the fair housing laws of the country, HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and where they stood in terms of housing, going back to 1930, 1940, and I have all that history now.
Okay.
My job was to teach them that everything we did had to be documented, nothing. So I gave lectures around the laws dealing with HUD mm-hmm. at that time, and the historical restrictive covenants up to 1948, they were unenforceable. They were enforceable to 1948. 1948, the Supreme Court ruled that the restrictive covenants throughout this country mm-hmm. were non-enforceable. Another way of saying they were illegal. We took that. I trained my staff in the committee and I have all those documents to say this is what this means.
So it was illegal.
Illegal, period.
The restrictive covenants.
Restrictive covenants. Illegal because they were unenforceable. I went back and gave them the whole history of how the government had set up communities, black and white, in the 1920s and 1930s, which I have a big history of that. And so what I gave them is a context. All the groups that worked with us had to have a context, because when they went out in the community, they had to have more than their own biases and prejudices. So they had to learn how to deal with records and documentation. And that's what my job as a director was, with the volunteer committee to do that. Then we moved in to creating those same committees in every community you can think of, fair housing committees, CIC housing committee. We on the staff were their consultants on the staff, but we organized a community around fair housing. My job, after we found out which cities had restrictive covenants on the books, whether they were being enforced or not, my job was to help with a couple of members on my staff. One was Father Davis, Catholic, beautiful man. Mm-hmm. And then the other was Grumpy, it seems to me, Grumpy. Well, I'm not sure I might have got that mixed up. Yeah, but both of these were Catholic. Mm-hmm. And then there was a Methodist minister also on my board, and Father Davis was on my board too. Another minister on my board, Harold Keir was his name, Harold, and then K-E-I-R, I guess, Keir, mm-hmm. the German Keir, later on, who also joined me, and he was the president of the Ministerial Alliance in San Diego. He joined with others to help organize fair housing councils. So I'll skip many days of details. And I chose to speak deliberately to the town council in Poway.
Okay.
Personally, I decided I wanted to talk to them about it. I also chose personally to go with my other friend, one of the ministers there, to Escondido, because they also had him on their books.
Was this ministerial council, were they African American?
No.
They were all white?
All white. Everybody okay. I've mentioned so far were all white.
Okay.
Now, we had just begun to get black people involved in these kind of things, activities. Mm-hmm. The blacks were still mostly invisible. So when we came, they heard that there was this black man downtown that the city had brought in here. Who was he? Is he in Uncle Tom? Who is this black man coming in here that we are hearing so much about, that we saw on television, that they gave the inaugural, they took our speech of the year mm-hmm. here. They had now announced that they had hired a black man now to head CIC. Okay. And of course, the media was carrying it. He would give his first speech, whatever the date was, November 3rd or whatever, open to the public. So the blacks were standing back looking, who is this? Who is this black man? Is he an Uncle Tom? Yeah, he got to be an Uncle Tom because they didn't consult us, that whole thing. Okay. So I said, I knew that. So it was no big deal. So I began to identify black people in the community who saw the big picture. Mm-hmm. I give credit for one family named June and Tom. Let's see, June and Rucker was his last name. How am I forgetting it? The Ruckers, anyway. During this period of time, in making friends then with some black groups. I began to talk to all the black groups.
Mm-hmm.
But during this period of time when I first got here, we were not involved as a black community in what these big efforts. We simply lived downtown up to that area, about 13 census tracts, and the Urban League had made us study all these, had made us study also of where we lived. And the 13 census tracts is the result of the study done by the Urban League at that time. They did the basic study of where we lived and all this, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
We took that and mapped it out, what the census were, had these councils going around. And so I went to Poway and made that pitch, and to Escondido personally and made that pitch with one of my minister's friends.
And what was the pitch?
The pitch was, we, the CIC, as you probably know, we're here representing the total community, and we are here to request that the restrictive covenants that are still on your books be declared illegal, or for you to make this announcement to the community as a town council representing the little towns. Your job is to let them know that you now disavow that.
Okay.
In Escondido, it was particularly fascinating because they had a mechanic shop. Yeah, over the years, where a black man was in charge of some of the mechanics, fixing cars and so forth. And some of the Indians, who also I should have included, were into this restrictive stuff. They were part of, you don't do that. And Indians and blacks, for example, were very good friends. And Escondido, Father Grumpy, or Father Davis, I think it was Grumpy, I'm not sure which one it was. It was somebody else, another priest followed me. He says, you see that? I say, yeah. He says, when I was a little boy, we lived over there and so forth. But I used to see them, and my family used to talk about the blacks had to get out of town before, blacks and Indians and Mexicans, what they call them, bad names, had to get out of town before dark. He says, when I grew up, I said I was going to do something about it. And this is, Carol, I'm glad you came because we're going to do something about it. And he says, when we used to talk to them about why did the blacks have to get out of town and all this, they gave us this whole thing about the covenants and so forth. Mm-hmm. And you ought to look into that. He says, I'm so glad. I want to be the one to speak also here. He did.
Okay.
How
and this was Grumpy?
Grumpy.
Okay.
I think it was Grumpy of Davis. I'm not sure which one it was. It seems to me on this one I got my years mixed up. What it was, whatever it was, the priest and I spoke before the city. The city council, they didn't have city councils as such. I spoke in Poway, and I spoke in Escondido along with this minister, the priest. Please remove it, but we want you to announce, as you do other in your letters and so forth, that you are opening the city up for all the people in the period. Especially peoples of color, including the Indians who could not live here.
Hmm.
And all the typical kind of reactions you can imagine. And that's what we requested. All in writing till we gave them this. So there was nothing like just accidental.
Right.
We put every little request in writing at all the cities. There was Fallbrook that I mentioned was the headquarters for the White Citizens Council. And the KKK. So along with these others was Fallbrook. Fallbrook, though, represented a special case for us that I'll bring in later.
Okay.
Well, I can bring it in now and we can put it in perspective. Later on, in spreading their whole racial stuff, KKK, they were the equivalent to KKK in Fallbrook. They call us all kinds of names and so forth. They heard that there was their taxes through CIC meant that they were citizens too, so they had a right to speak to CIC and the city and the county to say they don't like what we were doing. just KKK, just imagine mm-hmm. the KKK. Because later on, we did have the KKK here, and they burned crosses here that we're going to talk about later. So, this little group in Fallbrook let us know that they didn't want no niggers here, and that they had they're paying their taxes for me, CIC, to talk to them about what they live, how they live in Oakland. We didn't have a right to do that because it's their money too, and they are paying my bill, and they don't like that. The typical kind of argument. Okay. I said, fine, let me go up to Fallbrook and meet some of these people. But before I could get around to them, after these others, they requested CIC to have a speaker. That annual fair came up, like the annual fair of the KKK, whatever, and they wanted a speaker. And so this in quotes, this nigger down there is talking all this stuff. Let's invite him. See if he'll come. We're going to dress him down. They use other names, mm-hmm. of course. Screw him and all this. So my board is sitting here, and they said, read that again, Carol. They're asking you to come to speak at their conference or whatever it was. I said, yep, here it is. Here it is. So I said, yeah, we go. So I went on to run around to my staff. I said, look, and at the meeting the next morning, I said, look, we have a request that KKK, the White Citizens Council, is asking us. Now, we've been the butt on TV and everything of all that, asking us to come to their conference and want me to speak. You're going to go? I'm not going to go up there. I said, look, we have been teaching that all peoples, plural, are people, and they have a right. They pay my salary too and yours. They ask us to come. All these other groups ask us to come and we go. So if you're staff and got my message, you should be able to go. I went around the room. I'm not going to go. You're so good with your stuff. You go, Carol. I said, Mary, No. I'm sorry this time. I said, well, I'm going to leave the room and somebody here decide who, if we're preaching our sermon. Mm-hmm. If we mean what we say, we put our prejudices behind us, like we're teaching, and one of us will go there and keep our crap in there. Well, I'm not going. You also said if we couldn't do it, let you know. So we're going to follow your advice. We can't do it. Mary, we can't do it. John, we can. No. You can. So I said, I'm going to leave the room and come back. When I came back in the room, all of them did this.
Put the heads down?
Trying to drop their head to let me know. There ain't no yes in this room. Wow. They said, you do it. You've been preaching this, you do it. I said, cool, I'll do it. So I told my board, I'll be going to the KKK meeting as one of their major speakers. They have these weekend conferences. They do all the preaching and all the poisonous stuff, all the stuff you hear about us, calling us every name. Mm-hmm. But I'm going. I'm going to speak. And I went.
What was the conference?
This is an annual affair, just like all the groups have annual affairs. Uh-huh. Annual conferences and conference. This is theirs all the weekend. And they talk.
Was it in Fallbrook?
In Fallbrook.
Oh, okay.
Right out of Fallbrook, yeah.
Okay.
They had a big conference room. They brought them from all over the country. And they had money, too. And I'm in his first class. I said, you might not like their ideology and their philosophy, but they are first class.
Okay.
They hired the best speakers in the world who spewed all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Had some of the best workshops, just like any of the. They had it together. They preach hatred. And I said, are you going? I said, yes, I'm going. I'm going to be part of that. I like this stuff. I said, this is great stuff for me. And so I got all dressed and went. I told them about housing. I told them about employment. I told them about everything. I said, I'm going to become one of you now. And for 30 minutes, I was one of them. And I said, now I'm going to be black again. I'm going to be white again. We had ourselves a ball. Now, their job was to, they asked me to come to evaluate their conference. Just like League of Women Voters, anybody mm-hmm. else. That's one of our services.
Right.
Would you evaluate how we're doing? I said, yes. I think I spoke on that night. No, this was separate. No, I want to go back and separate. Yeah, that's what it was. We stayed with that. I preached. I gave them this. And I came back and I reported. My God. I said, yeah, I had a good time. Someone wanted to talk to me privately. Had never talked to a black man. Had never seen a black man personally. They wanted to talk to me. And later on, I did get her a call, would I come back and evaluate them, one of their conferences.
After what were you evaluating about the conference?
Just like they have, if you have a conference on this campus here,
uh-huh.
and you want to know, did you meet, you know, they got a list of stuff.
Right.
Did you meet your objectives? How well did you do? Which speaker
oh, okay.
was good? Which speaker was good? Did they articulate the purpose of this very well? Did they honor their word? Just like any
so it was
conference.
A complete overview of their conference.
Oh, absolutely. Just like, and they got, as I said, they had the best speakers in the world. They had the best television stuff. Mm-hmm. They had put a conference on, just like any other conference. It was great. It was great. I just happened not to believe in Evan Glossop.
Right.
So I went back that time and I made the statement, what would you give for, you know, have for speakers, what would you give them? I gave them an A for this and that. No, John was a B. AA. Planning, AA+. Service, A+. Overall, yeah, for the conference part, I give them an A.
Okay.
They had the best conference you'll ever have. They had money to hire whomever they wished. So my job was to separate my stuff
okay.
from their stuff.
Right.
That was part of my training for the staff, and I said, if you can't do it, I'll do it. I went and made a learn report back to my board. They were together. We just happened not to be on the same page, but they were together. So this is a little town that I'm going to talk later on about fair housing and all this.
Mm-hmm.
I did. Now I'll pick up Fallbrook. Was a special, that's a special case. Escondido, I mentioned, Poway. Mm-hmm. Escondido, Poway, in the north. In the south, it was National City, Chula Vista, in the east, it was Alpine, El Cajon, La Mesa, Julian, all that group in the east.
Mm-hmm.
We had members from all of them on our housing committee. And our housing committee, At this point, we began to form human relations agencies by request in different cities at this time. We formed the human relations agency in Oceanside, because that was a military base we mm-hmm. talk about. And in La Mesa, in particular in La Mesa, El Cajon, Imperial Beach, and Coronado. And incidentally, two of them are still going.
Okay.
The one in, well, it died down, but I understand it's...
Which one?
Escondido. Oceanside, I mean.
Okay.
Oceanside. And last year, Imperial Beach
okay.
was reviving theirs.
I knew Oceanside was active for a long time. They were really doing things up.
We formed it.
Oh, I didn't know
that. We taught
them
how to investigate. We talk about all kinds of military complaints and
mm-hmm.
so on.
Okay.
So stick with housing and get this out of the way. We formed this housing committee. In short, we opened up all the places for blacks to live. Our job then was to articulate, even to black people here, that it's open now. Just before I came, though, in 64, starting in 59, there were some students who came to San Diego State, about 15 students, women primarily, after they got married, and so yeah, they came to San Diego State. Two or three of them still live. We were the first people to come to San Diego State because at that time, this was part of the enemy territory. We could not live around here.
So you were saying 15 women of color?
Of color, black women, right.
Black women?
About 15 people.
Okay.
Several of them black women. That was the total population at different times, starting when the university was popular in 56 or whatever it was. I learned later, I think it was 1959 when they did this little survey and found there were about 15 black people here.
Okay.
Now, I bring that up because, again, when you open up the housing, the question obviously was, well, we don't go there because we were over here. It's two different cities. So we said, look, we got to do something about this. So in about 1959, the place is known now as Emerald Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what's that other place, Emerald Hills? Or just skip my mind. Valencia Park.
Okay.
Valencia Park and Emerald Hills. We're all Jewish, primarily Jewish. It began to open up, 59. So by the time I got here, it was just, and this fair housing stuff had just begun to be popular, and Jews were moving out. Now, there were more people besides Jews there, but like in other stuff, all kind of myths spread. And as far as they were concerned, they were Jews and they were moving out and didn't want to live near black people. They were white people, not necessarily Jews. That's how Valencia Park and Emerald Hills began to be integrated.
Okay.
The whites moved out and the blacks moved in. So by the time I got here 5 years later, it was just beginning to tilt. As now... So we began to move this way, east. And finally we got beyond that and got as far as Senegal State.
Okay.
And then we got as far as Alpine and El Cajon and La Mesa. Skipping a lot of stuff in here. My job was again to open up in housing with the committees that worked in open housing. One of them still going, she's no longer the Human Relations Agency in La Mesa. Until 2 years ago, had taken what they had learned in the fair housing training and so forth as part of CIC. Clara Harris was our chair of housing.
Mm-hmm.
She opened up her own agency in El Cajon, in La Mesa rather, and she only changed from being a consultant around the world in housing about 4 years ago.
Oh,
about 5 years
okay.
ago, she rented all those times and did training in fair housing. And she's still a consultant to the government and many others just in fair housing. But she started out as one of the chairs of our fair housing.
Okay.
Fascinating lady, too.
Yeah, I've met her.
Yeah, you met her. Yeah, last name, Claire Harris.
Yeah.
Well, to make it short for housing, as a result of what we did, we opened up the county so blacks could live in all the areas. Now blacks live in all parts of the county. That does not mean that there are not some or has not been some of the ugly incidents.
Mm-hmm.
There have been. White crosses have been burnt, or even burnt on City Councilman George Stevens' yard, even after I came. White crosses were burnt in La Mesa, in El Cajon. And it does not mean things have gone smoothly in every case. They haven't.
Okay.
They still have some incidents where they don't think black people should live. But the point is, CIC opened up the whole area through its many communities.
So the biggest, one of your biggest accomplishments was being able to open housing. People could live anywhere.
That's right. That was a big accomplishment.
And... other than housing, what other
employment.
Okay.
Big area. I mentioned that we were not hired and we did not work in hotels in any capacity.
So CIC worked with all people of color, not just African American or blacks.
Oh, yeah, everybody.
Okay.
Citizens, it was called Citizens Interracial Committee.
Right.
Oh, yeah, we worked with all of them. And my staff was about, you might have seen, I had sat with Al Caldillo. The staff at all times of CIC should be at least 40% non-black.
Okay.
And we followed that.
What was the ethnic makeup of the committee?
The committee, we had, you mean the staff?
Staff, right.
My staff had, let's see if I got these figures still correct. I think I got it correct. We had 19 9 different ethnic racial groups.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. And 20 plus languages spoken on our committees.
Okay. Very diverse.
Very diverse, to say the least. Black men and women, white men and women, brown men and women. That's very helpful. So employment, biggie, big one. First big job was to get the word out that the city council had to change, and the city employment had to change. No blacks in the corridors there.
Sure.
No blacks walking around in City Hall. Of course, we did not have any black city council people. The county was just as bad. The only black person of note in the county was Leon Williams, who later became the first. Yeah, you have his stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Leon Williams was the token black in the sheriff's department. Whom I met right away after I came to San Diego. We're still friends. We just talked 2 days ago.
Okay.
Leon was concerned at last about employment. That is, he had an ally now to talk about employment. At this time, when I came, there was no other group, organized or not, that addressed employment. Remember CORE I told you about?
Mm-hmm.
CORE was contesting and complaining about all this stuff, but not in a pinpointed way. CORE was concerned that black people were being discriminated against, and they were still inferior people in this town, and they wanted to change. Young people's idealism, which was great. Our job was to come after CORE, pick up where they were, and pinpoint it. This one was employment. And so I met Leon. We met Leon,
mm-hmm.
and we had an employment committee. The most active committee we had was our employment committee.
Okay.
I got reams of reports where we took the Navy on, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
We took the military on, which was good, rather. All of them. Employment. We opened up that whole area with the military. I mean, all of them, including the Marines up at Camp Pendleton.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Military, employment. So let me branch off while it's on my mind, and then we'll pick up our committee. Employment. Two things. I missed a couple of things in housing I'll pick up. Employment.
Okay.
Employment. We had to address the establishment of employment first. The employment establishment, which by which we meant the city, San Diego State, UCSD, USD, all the colleges and universities, the educational establishment.
Mm-hmm.
We had to address the military establishment. We had to address the industry of hotels and motels that we've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So ours was, we had to look at a conceptual framework and look at the invisible rules and so forth for environment. Here was some of the things about employment. Since this is military. A high-ranking general, or he's a lieutenant colonel, I think it was. I don't know. We'll say Colonel Bobby.
Okay. Colonel?
Colonel. Came into town. Pilot. To give nighttime training at Myanmar, the air base. Up at Myanmar Air Base. At night, combat training. Him and his wife came in. In Coronado over there, where they had the all the military stuff. They lived there by day and so forth. Military was paying them. But their job was to teach training at night. Combat. He tried to find housing, as other military people did, in Coronado. He couldn't. They wouldn't rent him stuff. So he was angry, and finally somebody said, "You go down and see Carol Women at CIC." So they came down, and he says, "Are you the director?" I said, "Yes." "We want to talk to you, not your staff." I said, "Okay." But after he started talking, I said, "I think I need a staff in here. This is great stuff, man." He says, "Okay." Because he first had to establish a willingness to, that I was honest, and that, mm-hmm. that we meant what we said, and we were not going to betray them, because he was high ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't make complaints directed to Washington if you're high ranking.
That's right.
So I said, "Okay." He says, "You understand all that? I understand that you're a military." I said, "Yeah, I understand that. Don't worry, we know how to handle it." So I called my staff and I said, "Man, this is..." I said, "Can we record it?" He says, "Yeah." We started all over. He gave me the whole story. He says, "I tried to get housing. And I had to do it through the military. But I could not jump over the local military and go to Washington. But somebody's got to get to Washington." I said, "We'll get to Washington." Skipping forward, we got to Washington. And we told our story. I said, "We got to talk to somebody in the Pentagon." Well, luckily in my whole association with CIC, I said, "No, we need to go directly to the presidential." He says, "No, we decided, we talked about it. He's a colonel. That's a whole military establishment outside of the White House. Who do we know, or how can we get to somebody who can pick up the phone and say, change this, without going through all this stuff? It'll take a year or so." I called my buddy and I said, "We got to do something about it. He cannot be identified. We'd ruin the whole case."
Mm-hmm.
"It is we who discovered that there was somebody in town, very high ranking, and we talked to them and we found out they were living so and so, but they'd like to live off the..." Oh, I said, "That's how it has to be." We did that.
So CIC became the front person for
this. Right. That's right. And okay. We changed it. And we changed it. He did a great job. He was great. That was housing.
Okay.
And employment. Still employment. There was a couple that came here to work at San Diego State University here. Their names will fall into place in a few minutes. Both of them, husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
She was to work in, she had a job in the department, in this social studies, social work.
Social work?
Yeah, social work. Beautiful man, I'll never forget him. Had also come to San Diego for a lot of good stuff. The reason that the School of Social Work is what it is today is because of CIC, but we'll get to that later. Man and wife came to teach here at San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
They were hired as faculty. So faculty had a little house over here, had several houses over here on Campanile, where the faculty wives, there was an association called Faculty Wives.
Mm-hmm.
They were very active, as if women would be more active than the men. They took care of business right away. So they applied to live in a house. No. "Well, we are employed over here at San Diego State." "Doesn't matter." It's a no-no. So they heard about CIC. Luckily, it's on the CIC had on its board, that time he was not on the board, but later on, yeah. Yeah, that's, leave it there.
Okay.
So, they wanted to know how they could get housing. San Diego State provided housing for faculty. Why didn't it provide it for them? They gave them a garage to live in, not with no cars in it, of course, mm-hmm. So no, fixed right. up a garage for them to live in while they, Senegal State, looked into it.
Who gave them the garage?
The council here through the Senate. Well, okay. I don't know which exact
okay.
unit.
But it was the campus who gave them.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We're going to get to that. Gave them a garage where they could stay while they looked into it. Husband and wife.
Okay.
They came to CIC and says, Carol, let's have lunch. We were at one of your meetings and so forth. And we heard that you can handle this. I said, what is this? They told me. I said, what? See, yeah. And we don't like it. I said, you shouldn't like it. So I called my staff in and I said, write all this, tape it, please. She taped it. We got all the interviews incidentally. All the stuff I'm telling you, this was every interviewed, we have them. This office here at Senegal State has maybe 100 tapes already
right.
in perfect shape.
Yes.
Some of that may be included in there. So okay. I said, what should we do? Tom was his name.
Mm-hmm.
Her name will come in a minute. Says.
So the San Diego State couple, the man's name was Tom.
That's right.
Okay.
And they said, we don't want to stay and work at a place like this, but we're not going to leave either until it's addressed publicly. I said, I don't blame you. How much freedom do you want me to use your name? 100%. Is there anything in your case at all that I should not mention or say? No. Here's the whole story. Do it all. I said, okay, Tom. They live in this garage, and they said, we're going to stay deliberately now. They chose to stay in the garage until the case got in our office.
Okay.
Not by accident, that they stayed there. They got a little room, an apartment, after they were sure that the case would be exposed. I called and met for the first time the vice president of this university. His name is beautiful. O'Byrne is his name. Everybody knows O'Byrne. O and then the apostrophe, B-Y-R-N. I said, okay. So I met with him here and said, you got a problem. Employment and housing. Employment and housing. And so I laid out the case. This vice president says, but wait a minute. We have whatever it is in common language is faculty wives club.
Okay.
And they ought to be able to do something about it. I said, yeah, but they went to them and this is part of the problem. He says, we'll do something about it. Now, I forget the sequence. I'd have to keep talking about the sequence. Doesn't matter. He did something about it. He changed it. He said, yes, CIC should, he was not on the board yet, but later on he got on the board. He says, I like what you're doing, heard about you. He became our ally in opening up a lot of stuff out here that we're going to talk about later. He was as straight as they come. He said, I want to speak to the president. He was vice president.
Mm-hmm.
He told him about this case. And told the wives to do something about it. Over on Campanella now is whatever is the faculty housing, whatever it is over there. And they then allowed Tom and his wife to at least stay in a related apartment. That is, I don't remember the details, but the Wives Club Association, through the vice president's office here, did find some place related to the state, to State University, mm-hmm. for them to stay for that year while they stayed. Then they left.
Mm.
They left because of what I just said.
Right.
They didn't like it. And most of all, they didn't like it because there was no system in place here to address that problem because, of course, San Diego State does not discriminate against people because of color. So they had no reason to establish a mechanism until now. As a result of that, state opened up the opportunities for other black people, if they had them, on the faculty level and moved into town, opened it up so they could be addressed by the state university, rather than by community groups' complaints. And now you
so
have
so state, state established university. Their own grievance with employment and housing.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't have to go outside
right.
to CIC.
Yeah. The mechanism was established.
Okay.
But you haven't heard it yet.
Oh, okay.
Tom and, there's a name, but it just went by me. They left. They left. Stayed in contact with them for a long time. She was from the Panama, she was Panamanian one of the other groups. She was black in this country, but I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, after it died down a little bit, an opening came up in the political apartment.
Okay.
And one day I got this call that says, you need to meet this man here. We interviewed him for a job at San Diego State, and his name is Wally Miles. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what? Yeah, we're going to offer him a job. I said, where's he going to live? Well, we took care of it this time. We have a list of places close by, whatever. We have to talk to Wally about it.
About what year was this?
It was close to 60 to 69. Must have been 69, the last year we were operating.
Okay.
Because we called him up. He was an adjunct at that time. Whatever it is, we can talk to Wally because he's alive, you know.
Right.
Whatever it was, we had to intervene. I don't want to misrepresent this. It was done. At first they were going to not let him have whatever it was. And I think it was burned again, the same vice president, who said, we want to see that he gets the right stuff this time. So they called me up and said, wait a minute, I'm getting something mixed up. Let me just let my mind spread through this thing a little bit.
Okay.
No, that's right. The dates are wrong, but the sequence is right.
Okay.
And while I came here.
Year was that?
I'm thinking it was 69, but it might have been 70.
Okay, we can check on that.
Yeah, you can check on that easily. We became good friends.
And he was a political science professor?
That's right. He was eventually the chair of the political science department here. He retired from being the chair of it. He was active throughout the whole country.
Okay.
Wally Miles. He's active now. He travels all around the world, all over the place, and does lectures and training right now. He not only became a professor in the political science department, but as I said, became the chair. But more than that, he became the first tenured track professor, black, in the whole history of San Diego State.
Oh, okay.
That is, he was on the track to become tenured.
Right.
He became tenured.
Was he the first tenured professor?
Professor, period, throughout the whole state university.
Oh, okay.
Throughout this whole university system.
Throughout the entire California State University
system? No,
just through San Diego
State.
Right. Okay.
Dealing with employment. San Diego State has never hired a professor, black, African American, to be on as a permanent staff member of the Department of Sociology and the Department of Psychology I'll stick with those two.
Okay.
As a permanent tenure track professor. After all these years, it is still that way. It is still that way at San Diego State University, and it bugs me all the time, and we're going to do something about it this year. No black has ever been hired on a tenure track at San Diego State University because they're black. A man by the name of Tom Mac Junkins, that you'll hear a lot about.
Tom who?
Mac Junkins, N-K-I-N-S, M-C. Very popular family here.
Okay.
Was involved in the desegregation case that we're going to talk about, the famous case. I might as well talk about it after this. No, I'll wait till we get to education on that. The famous Collin case.
Mm-hmm.
Mac Junkins was involved in the whole educational establishment. He's a sociologist, great one, everywhere in the community. Not only respected, but sought after.
Mm-hmm.
As well, to speak and do research and all this. He taught on a part-time basis in the sociology department here. 1970, 1968, 1970, 1971, and all that, whatever it was there. And he invited me to speak, and I did. This is CIC time.
Okay.
Still CIC. And he says, Carol, I don't know what's going to happen, but they won't even hire me as a full professor. You ought to look into this sometimes. I did not. That was fortuitous because later on, when we hear about the Collin case, that became a central part of it. But at this point, they would not hire him as a full professor. Or a part-time professor, for that matter, on a permanent basis as a tenure-track professor in the sociology department.
Okay.
So employment at San Diego State was bad. Moving away from San Diego State had an awful, in quotes, black spot in terms of employment. Sticking with education and employment, I'll have to get the research out, but we did the research, all the research. I didn't bring in the studies. All the research relating to San Diego City Schools employment. Awful. The majority of women were nurses and teachers.
Majority of black,
black women? Black women, professional black women. Nurses in the health field and teachers. Let me see now. That's... just leave that as a, that we did, we opened it up, but that, I mentioned it to give you the context.
Okay.
Of city schools. There were about 23 employees. I have to get the record out. I think it's 23 employees, black, out of the total number at that time. I should have brought the research, but I'll bring that, I'll fill that in.
Okay.
So I'll skip that and talk about that. Still employment. We therefore did seminars for the Navy, for the Marines. We formed committees, military committees, that continued through the 70s. I talked to them every year, military. We worked with them. They were beautiful. They recognized that they had a problem. They recognized the social unrest in the country. And they came to CIC to put programs together to help them do that, overcome it. We did that with the military. It's beautiful. We're talking about employment here.
Mm-hmm.
Another employment situation dealt with another black minister, just like the black pilot.
Mm-hmm.
A black minister came to be the pastor of an important, popular church in Imperial Beach. You stayed there for a while, but you couldn't get a place to live in the community.
Mm-hmm.
After only, this is not accurate, but the concept, after you stayed a year, let's say.
Okay.
After you stayed a period of time. He and his family decided that the time is not right yet for a black minister in Imperial Beach for the church. CIC was instrumental in helping them to put it in perspective, so when they left, there would be some legacy that they had been treated this way and that it was resolved to their satisfaction, but it should be institutionalized in some way so it did not happen again. Imperial Beach. This has a fascinating history also that can be looked up, just as the military man did. This was all related to employment. I guess employment and housing, but employment. He was employed to be the minister. He was ahead of his time because it's a white church.
It was a white church?
Yep.
Do you remember the name?
No, but it's, we can find out.
Okay. And this was in the early 70s?
Yeah. No, this is in the 60s.
60s.
Still in CIC's time.
Okay.
Oh, let me see now. Employment.
Even at the city schools, what was, you had started with the city schools, but...
I need to get the record out, but I'll give you the general...
Oh, okay. That's okay then. You can go to something else if you can...
City school, the church. Now let's see. Employment. Hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big one. Most of the employees in the hospitals were non-black.
Okay.
There were a few, and the black nurses always had good jobs in the hospitals and in private practice.
Okay.
Or other, I put nurses and black health professionals. Let's see what. Now, to give this some kind of context again. The employment picture for the military now was opened up through our committees and all the records we did and all the help we gave them. Through our education committee, the city schools began to address that problem.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that. In the county schools.
Okay.
Okay, I had begun to talk about Leon Williams. I didn't finish that. I should have. Leon Williams was the only black in the county government. He eventually left there and became the director of the city of the, what do you call it, the Corps Young.
He became director of the?
Young, of the Corps, C-O-R-P-S, but of the Youth Corps. That's
okay.
What it is, of the Youth Corps. In 1967, he left the county and became the director of the City Corps in 1967. City Corps was a federal funded program, still exists.
Okay.
Did a good job there. And he and I went to the Olympics in 1968 in Mexico City.
Oh, okay.
Now we begin to address the whole problem of city and the county and other institutions. Employment. I wrote the first employment action legislation for the city of San Diego, drafted the draft.
For affirmative the, action legislation?
Legislation.
Okay.
For the city to implement that, to enforce or employ the federal guidelines for hiring.
Okay.
I wrote the first affirmative action draft for the city of San Diego, for the county of San Diego, for the city schools.
Okay.
Employment. This employment, affirmative action, and the fair employment, fair employment, something else. Yeah, fair employment is good enough. I wrote that.
I wrote the fair employment?
Fair employment. I wrote the drafts for
okay.
fair employment. And that's what it is, equal opportunity. I drafted the first legislation for both of those, for the city and the county. And affirmative action for the city schools. San Diego District, that is. Then we get to the biggie.
Okay.
You leave it one?
Yes, so we have 10 more minutes.
All right, you can have Lynn call, if we've got
this will end today's interview with Dr. Carol Wayman. It is 12:50 on January the 31st, 2011 at San Diego State University Library and Information Access University Club Room.